Herzlich willkommen. Mein Name ist Dan Ting Nguyen.
Und mein Name ist Nina Reibrich.
Heute werfen wir einen Blick auf die Zukunftswerkstatt Diversity Check Ost-West. Eine Zukunftswerkstatt von Fluxus Quadrat TV, welche am 14. und 15.06.2024 stattgefunden hat.
Und im Rahmen dieser Zukunftswerkstatt haben wir uns FreundInnen und KollegInnen und MitdenkerInnen eingeladen, um gemeinsam über Migration und Diversität zu diskutieren und den Diskurs in Deutschland und Europa irgendwie nochmal neu zu beleuchten.
Warum haben wir das gemacht? Oft dominiert von angloamerikanischen Perspektiven bleiben ostdeutsche und mittelosteuropäische Ansätze in antirassistischen Diskursen häufig außen vor.
Und gemeinsam mit Partnern aus Berlin zum Beispiel, Savvy Contemporary, oder auch hier aus Hamburg, Hayusom, ein multiperspektivischem Ensemble, aber auch Daniele Staros da aus Sachsen und auch KollegInnen vom Postmigrantischen Radio, haben wir Fragen gesammelt. Wir haben irgendwie versucht, neue Perspektiven kennenzulernen. Und wir haben uns einfach Stimmen eingeladen, die frische Impulse liefern und gemeinsam nach einem europäischen Update gesucht.
Und diese Zukunftswerkstatt ist halt eine Zukunftswerkstatt. Und das bedeutet, das ist ein Beginn des gesellschaftlichen und intellektuellen Austauschs. So haben wir es zumindest verstanden. Und wir wollen daran weiterarbeiten hier bei Fluxus Quadrat e.V.
Und jetzt im Folgenden hören wir den Eröffnungsvortrag der Zukunftswerkstatt Diversity Check Ost-West. Der war von Joanna Warschau. Joanna Warschau ist inzwischen Stadtkuratorin der Stadt Hamburg. Sie ist Kuratorin und bildende Künstlerin, die an verschiedenen europäischen Universitäten und Museen aktiv ist.
Also was ich interessant fand bei Joanna Warschau bei dem Vortrag, das war zum ersten Mal diese Rolle von Kolonialismus im europäischen Projekt. Häufig kriegen wir in antirassistischen Diskursen, insbesondere der Zentrierung von BIPOC, die Rolle des Kontinentes Afrikas, da vergessen wir häufig, dass eines der kolonialen Projekte auch Polen war und die sogenannte Lebensraumsuche in Mittelosteuropa.
Naja, und also das vor allen Dingen, das fand ich auch das Spannendste. Und aber auch, dass es eine viel längere auch Geschichte, eine jahrhundertealte Geschichte nochmal gibt, die ja auch sozusagen über Polen hinaus, ne, der slawische Raum als ein Konstrukt eines zu kolonisierenden Gebietes. Und dass das vertan ist auch mit Antisemitismus und verschiedenen anderen Ausgrenzungsformen. Und das war so in der Klarheit in dem Vortrag für mich das erste Mal zu hören.
So in this kind of a journey to being sensitive to what is to be Eastern European, of course one has a radar of certain readings, and one of those radars confirming the Westocentrism as a paradigm in which we live both in East and Western Europe, referring ourselves defining ourselves towards what is the West, including the US grounded race theory within the diversity debates. I was just looking at small things, and one of this is the Zoom. Now I am on the Zoom, but also the Zoom, as it has become a very popular tool during the pandemic, you always had this kind of time zones in the Zoom. So you set up a meeting in a Zoom, and then it shows you that you are in the Central European time zone. And those are the example of the cities in which you this time is currently valid. And here I just made a screenshot of a Zoom that I was, while working in Riga in Latvia, I was a lot of Zooming with Riga, and every time I was Zooming with Riga, it was showing me that this is the Helsinki time. And then I thought, okay, Helsinki time, Riga is not appearing as a city. So I looked a little bit more, and in fact, the Zoom company has only marked the Western European cities for the times also of the Eastern European cities. So if you talk in Riga, you actually, it's according to Helsinki time zone. If you talk in Tirana, is Central European time, so Milan is appearing, or Paris, or other Western cities. And it seems like, you know, maybe a minor detail, not that important, but in fact, I think it opens also a certain perception of what Europe is, with all its problems, but also with all its colonial legacy, seen from the US Silicon Valley and seen from the Western perspective. So studying a little bit this, you know, kind of Europe be Europe, but not really Europe, of Eastern Europe. I thought, I of course looked at some writers who have read and thought about those questions. One of them is Witold Gombrowicz. He was saying it's a place on planet which tries to define itself but cannot. It's kind of a threshold. It's not really the West and it's not really the East. In some sense, it's always in a spagat between the two. While Maria Janion, in her prolific book Uncanny Slavdom also characterizes being or growing up in Poland or in Eastern Europe as in the double bind of inferiority and superiority. In some sense, inferiority to the West, Western Europe, mostly because of economic reasons, but also superiority in terms of being more spiritual and yet at the same time inferior and superior to the East, to the Russian territories, to Belarusia, also in the double bind of inferiority and superiority. And so both of them kind of define those territories, this, let's say, Weltschmerz that characterizes also Eastern Europe as being torn between inferiority and superiority. Then one of the research that I conducted with Jan Sova that was also in Savvy Contemporary was actually the legacy of serfdom. In German, it is the term Leibeigenschaft. And in fact, when you look, this is a map from 1800 of Europe, of European continent, because of course Europe is not only European Union, it's a continent that goes to Ural Mountains in the territory, in Russian territory. So within European continent, for many centuries, there was this divide on the Rhine River, which divided the Western countries that engaged in overseas exploration and, of course, in contributing to slavery, while Eastern European sides of Europe have become still dependent for many centuries on this attachment to the land, one can say inner colonization, the Leibeigenschaft. And in Poland at the moment, there is a big discussion on so-called the peasant's turn, understanding the implications of centuries-long dependence of peasants, the majority of the society, of the land. One thing I wanted to read around this, let me read two fragments. Among the historical implications defining Central Eastern Europe is the long-term existence of serfdom, a feudal form of forced dependence and oppression, which disappeared in Western Europe in the 14th through 16th centuries as an effect of economic transformation and peasants' revolts. As the scholar Jan Sova suggests, the Elbe River can be seen as a symbolic border between the development of slavery and serfdom. East of the Elbe, serfdom persisted till the end of the 19th century. West of it, the slave trade was delegated overseas and developed through colonization and modernization. European capitalism was thus built on various kinds of unfree labor inherent to both systems. And ironically, the Elbe once marked the border of the Roman Empire and later almost that of the Iron Curtain. Scholars such as Anibal Quijano, Immanuel Wallenstein, or Perry Anderson show that in the early modern times, the southeastern part of the European continent was integrated into capitalist world economy. While the core of Western Europe was turning to predatory expansion overseas, a kind of internal colonial expansion happened in the East. Serfdom developed and persisted in Eastern Europe till the end of the 19th century, turning the region into one of the first historically peripheral zones. And so I was, of course, it was kind of a revelation to understand this the Iron Curtain, so to say, not only divided the order of Europe since the Second World War, but it's this, let's say, centuries old order in which the consequences of which we live in now. And this, but also what was important for me was to overcome the condition of a possible victim. I didn't want to think of Eastern Europe or being Eastern European as being a victim only because obviously the colonial mindset, and this is why I'm calling this coloniality without colonies, the colonial mindset was shared across the whole continent. It was just exercised in the different ways, and it is still shared in some sense on both sides. So I looked into a number of artists who have dealt with these topics, and one of them was Jan Simon, and we also presented his work at SABI in 2017. And he was maybe the first person in Poland looking actually at the history that never was. The fact that the imperial aspirations and the imperial dreams was as strong as they were in Germany, in France, in England. Just simply the historical circumstances didn't lead them to fruition. So there were no, except for a very short moments, no colonies that belonged to Poland, so to say. But there was an ongoing debate with Germany together, for example, over the possession of Madagascar or Togo and other places. This picture from the research of Jan Simon shows an organization called Colonial and Maritime League that counted in 1939 1 million people. So 1 million people were part of this league in order to foster the colonial thinking. And here you can see them marching in the streets of Poznań and saying the strength of Poland lies in colonies, in possible colonization. So what we try to kind of demonstrate and question in those exhibitions, number of exhibitions, this is also from SABI, was SABI back then, maybe you still continue with the program Colonial Neighbors. So it was also about Polish and German implication in unfulfilled colonial plans. But also it was just not only to bring this history, but also to understand the continuum of it within, for example, the right-wing governments. Now, luckily in Poland, seems like for the moment, we are over the right-wing wave that is coming and taking over everywhere else. It can always come back. But in those 8 years of the last right-wing government, obviously these tendencies of inner expansion and imperial thinking that somehow we believed were rooted in the long continuum of those moments were very strong. Another example I wanted to share is the Polish pavilion I curated at the Venice Biennial with Małgorzata Mirgatas, the first Roma artist ever to be exhibited in a national pavilion at the Venice Biennale. Venice Biennale, of course, itself has a long and problematic history. Still, we all play this game and this carnival, many of us in the art world, and the countries have this national representation. So I think what is always important is to challenge the national or the political representation of place. And that was an attempt to turn this pavilion, which is a Polish pavilion, into a transnational Polish-Romani pavilion. And in a way, it showed us, this is the installation, the beautiful installation of Małgorzata, is a rereading of an important palazzo, Palazzo Schifanoia in Italy, in Ferrara, important palazzo for Abi Warburg's concepts of art history, such as Bilderfahrzeuge or Nachleben of images. So she kind of, with the textile, remade it, and also remade the art history and the blind spots and the, for example, complete absence of a Roma minority within the art history. So that was an attempt also to see how the mechanisms of racialization have worked within the European continent. Because as you might know, Roma are the largest minority of Europe. They count 12 million people. Somehow they are still very within any, for example, cultural infrastructures, but not only, very underrepresented, very absent, very invisible, many of them obviously living also on the edge of exclusion for the society. Those are the facts, and this is the reality. And till the 19th century, slavery has persisted in Romania, for example, in Eastern Europe, on Roma and Sinti citizens. So that's also a way that was also a way to completely trying to reverse the perception and the representation of how Roma people sometimes are represented within Europe, and to show the contribution, the European contribution of that culture in an affirmative, emancipatory and empowering way. Because there are many things the majority can learn from the Roma lifestyle and Roma contribution, for example, lack of any national aspiration. It's a minority that doesn't claim any willingness to possess a territory. It's speaking of, you know, diversity in post-migrant society. It's always through coexistence that Roma are defining themselves. It's always through a condition of being bilingual, of a condition of being with, in conversation, living together in a coexistence, that this culture exists. So here is one more example of the rereading of that palazzo. And finally, one more example also related to those questions is another Biennale in Kosovo, another part of Eastern Europe. So that's also was interesting for me. I had the pleasure to work there for 4 years in Kosovo. If one travels to Kosovo, of course, you travel very much west from, for example, from Berlin. You travel very much west. It's very near South Italy, near Albania, at the end of former Yugoslavia, at the south end of it. So geographically speaking, if you look at the map of Europe, you're in the middle of Europe. However, if you arrive to Kosovo, and you might know politically, it's a country that has been recognized by, let's say, half countries on the planet, and the other half are questioning its existence. And so when you arrive there, you really have a predominant feeling, again, coming back to also the feeling I had in my childhood, that Europe is not here. We might be maybe on the European continent, but the true Europe is somewhere else. And it's, of course, a form of auto-colonization, self-colonization, but also, in fact, it's the fact, because only this year, the visas to go to any other country than Albania will be removed. So within European continent, of course, this mobility is also a myth, because the citizens of Kosovo were almost, you know, contained within the country. This Biennale, Autostrada Biennale, that we called with Ovuldur Muzoglu, with whom we created this Biennales of Resistance, this Biennale is actually taking over a former NATO base. So there was a NATO base, actually a German NATO base, in the city of Prizren, second city in Kosovo. And now, as part of demilitarization of this area, but also one can want to say a demilitarization of the mindset, the culture institution has arrived there, marking also, you know, what I guess maybe we here present in this conference believe in how culture values can contribute to the life in post, in less violent society. And this is definitely the contribution of the Autostrada Biennale, also to the logic of Biennales, because they are helping us to redefine this model. They are, for example, showing us that the money should not be put in the insurance and endless transports, but can be made locally in the educational processes. So also how biennial models can help to foster local communities. But that's on one hand. And on the other hand, their engagement in the post-colonial and decolonial debates of Eastern Europe continues. And one of those aspects is this work. It's a work of a Ukrainian collective open group. This year, they represented Poland at the Venice Biennale, actually. And it's a project about what is might be needed in the European continent, about the restoration. It's a former NATO landing field. And on this field, what you see is the map, one-to-one map of three museums that were completely destroyed from the beginning of the war in Ukraine. So in a way, you can enter in some kind of specific site visit, You can enter inside those museums. You can revisit them. You can restore them. You can reconnect to them. And in a way, you can also see the art's role in rebuilding those ties in both locally in Ukraine, within Eastern Europe, but also across the European continent. So I'll stop here and thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you for that input first. And I'd like to ask, what would you recommend to get more in contact with that topic, maybe visiting that Kosovo Biennale? Does it happen every 2 years like others? Or what would you recommend to us to work with that topic?
I think generally, you know, I would recommend to everyone, because I think this Westocentrism is in the condition that many of us share, if we want or not. So generally, looking also to the East and not in the West, in, for example, intellectual references or even travels, yeah, or biennial network. So definitely going to Autostrada Biennial, it's instead of, for example, Basel Art Fair, it's something I would definitely recommend. I think the next one is in July 2025. When it comes to reading, I would recommend a Facebook group, which is called Decolonizing Eastern Europe. And it's kind of an interesting platform where many scholars, and not only scholars, but mostly scholars, exchange their texts on those issues, on how the topic of racialization has operated and navigated within Eastern Europe, and serfdom also, the history of serfdom. So, this. There is also East European Biennial Network, for those interested more like in art biennials, Eastern European Biennial Network, and this involves also Kiev Biennial, which is now a perennial and itinerant organism, and also Kosovo and other, Prague, I think, and other cities. Yes, that's the most, I think.
Thank you, Anna. There's another question here. Lee. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you also from my side for your very great presentation and your talk. I would be interested if you could highlight a little bit more how this serfdom was argumented and also legitimized, because like on the question of like slavery, we have like a lot of important work highlighting how Enlightenment philosophers and so on put up like this very deep concept of racism without highlighting that it is racism, of legitimizing it. And I would be interested how this was made up for the serfdom in like Poland, Ukraine, and so on.
Mm-hmm. You know, in a way, the whole of Europe was going through serfdom till 15th, 16th centuries. So the fundaments, the cultural fundaments of serfdom, of basically, you know, concepts that we know very well till today, exploitation, attachment, accumulation of resources, everything which is actually proto-capitalist organization, it has been shared across Europe. And then serfdom, due to peasants' war, and also due to the actually enlightenment and interest in overseas expansion, has disappeared in Western Europe and has kind of reinforced itself in Eastern Europe. So even in the relation till today between Poland and Ukraine, obviously one can read it through the history of serfdom and through the history of a colonial thought and colonial aspiration that the Polish noble castes had over the Eastern territories. Even in the language, in Polish language, there are terms like kresy, actually it even comes from the German word kreis, like kresy, meaning, you know, the empty, the same kind of rhetorics of the empty lands in which are just free for you to explore. And this is the language in which operates till today when thinking of the Eastern part of Europe. And of course, it's absolutely the same kind of mental construction which also led to the war in Ukraine, of just being able to, you know, aspire to take possession over Russia, over Ukraine. It also stems, I guess, from these histories. So what I was trying, we were trying to argument in this article is that the colonial mindset has and is a deep mindset of the whole of European continent that has to be undone, unreworked. And of course, your work is contributing and your engagement very much to this. However, it has played differently within Eastern European continent. It's a little bit more hidden. It's less obvious when it comes to the discrepancy and racialization. But obviously it exists there and persists there.
My question is kind of historical too, because I'm wondering if you see any kind of heritage of the socialist period when Poland or Eastern Europe countries were together with the former GDR as so-called brother lands. Do you see kind of still existing ties or something?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. Thank you. For sure, the condition of socialization is something shared across Eastern Europe and also former GDR. So even if those countries, as we knew them, don't exist since 1989, the socialization, the post-socialist condition, I think, as Doreen Mende is coining this, it's very much of the reality till today. And, you know, we just saw the map of how Germany has voted. I guess we still see the River Elbe approximately as a border. So this historical implication of the socialist republics, I see it as a just one of the episodes in the very long durée. You might have seen the exhibition at HKW in Berlin, also showing the huge, you know, life price that many of the Bruderländer workers have paid by coming to East Germany. It was maybe less the case in Poland, because in Poland there was always a very subversive approach to communism, and communism didn't hold that strong as other countries like GDR. There was always a possibility of resistance and of creating your parallel reality. Yes, I would have to think a little bit more about this question. I'm sure these implications, of course, they do, absolutely, they do exist. And that's why I'm now interested in the questions of serfdom. I will work on serfdom next year in Halle, in East Germany, to try to exactly look for those ties, how this legacy of serfdom can still be readable in the conditions of who we are as Eastern Europeans.
Das war eine Aufnahme einer Veranstaltung von der Zukunftswerkstatt Diversity Check Ost-West von unserem Verein Fluxus Quadrat e.V.
Und wenn ihr noch mehr über uns rausfinden wollt, findet ihr alle Informationen in den Shownotes oder ihr besucht einfach unsere Website www.fluxus2.com. Da findet ihr auch alle Infos, falls ihr der Meinung seid, wir sollen unbedingt weitermachen mit unseren Projekten, wie ihr Fördermitglieder werden könnt oder uns spenden könnt oder auch anderweitig supporten könnt.
Falls ihr jetzt merkt, das reicht mir nicht, ich möchte mehr wissen, ich möchte wissen, was haben die noch mehr gemacht bei der Zukunftswerkstatt Diversity Check Ost-West, dann findet ihr die weiteren Podcasts hier auf der Seite oder auch auf www.fluxus2.com.